Okay. So since we're having a shiur next week, we won't speak about Pesach tonight. We'll speak about the Sedra. And more general, we're starting a new book in the Torah, Vayikra, which to a large extent speaks about sacrifices. So we'll speak about a little bit about the concept of sacrifices, how it works, what it's all about. We'll start, though, from the very beginning of the Sedra, Vayikra el Moshe. The Rabban Shem called to Moshe, and Moshe, when he was called, came in. The rabbis say on that on this call, Talmud Chacham she'ein bo das, a Talmud Chacham that doesn't have das, and we'll explain what that means, he doesn't have das, nevela tova himenu, a dead carcass is better than him. Okay. The way that this is explained is the following. You can imagine that Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to rush in and hear a shiur from the Ribbono Shel Olam, the first shiur on Kodshim, on Korbanos in history. And he was anxious, but he didn't rush in. He waited till he was called. From there we learn that a Talmud Chacham has to have Das. The Rambam refers to the laws of Derech Eretz, Midos Tovos, my good character, as Deos. Deos in the Lashon of the Rambam is Midos. So Talmud Chacham She'ein Bo Das can be understood, a Talmud Chacham who doesn't have basic Midos Tovos, so even a dead carcass is better than him. What does that mean? It means the following, that we've said in the past, I'm not going to go into great detail about it, but just the concept, that, let me turn this on. We said in the past, huh? The microphone, I guess, yeah. That which separates man from the animal is midos. That a human being, can say no. He's not just a trained animal, but he can make conscious choices and behave in a way that doesn't just do what comes naturally, doesn't follow his baser instincts, but he can go and change those instincts and go against them if he has to. We said that the Rabbeinu Yonah says that lo yishkon haTorah laolam. It's on the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos that im ein derech eretz ein Torah. There's no derech eretz, there can't be Torah. And Rabbeinu Yonah says, "Lo yishkon haTorah laolam b'misha ein bo midos tovos." The Torah cannot exist forever by somebody who doesn't have midos tovos. And he explained it to mean that temporarily it can exist, but it can't exist forever, because a person who has not worked on his midos and he's not in control of himself, and he just basically does whatever whim comes up. So temporarily he can act very nicely until the whim comes up. Or as we said, until the mouse goes by. Right? You can train a cat to be a waiter, but the mouse goes by, the cat knows he's a cat. So a human being can also be trained. But as soon as the mouse goes by and the Yetzer Hara, and everybody has different Yetzer Haras, he's going to be down on all fours chasing the mouse unless he's in control. So unless a person knows how to measure his behavior and behave like a mensch, like a human being, and not like an animal, right, then he's not a human being. He's a glorified animal. And Reb Shimcha Zissel said about Darwin. He said that Darwin formulated the theory of evolution because he never saw a real human being. So he assumed that the animals that he saw came from other animals. Had he ever seen a real human being like my Rebbe, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, he never would have made such a theory that Rabbi Yisrael Salanter could come from an animal, come from an ape. What did he mean? He didn't mean that Darwin was some kind of lowlife who hung around with other lowlifes, people that swung from trees eating bananas or guzzling beer. Darwin was a very refined person. But what he meant to say is the following. A person who has not worked on his midos and is not in total control, is just a glorified animal, because you can train an animal also to act very refined, but you can't change its instincts. The animal will never be in total control. So a human being who's not in total control, but can be trained to act nicely, right, is no different than an animal. So it's possible that this kind of person came from this animal. They're basically the same. One is more refined, a little bit more progressed than the other one. It's possible. But a human being who's worked on his midos, who's in total control, is a different type than an animal. An animal can never be like that. So that this type came from this other type can't be. That's what he meant. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter had worked on himself to the point where he was in total control. There was no mouse that could come by and pull him down on all fours. That is totally different than an animal. It says in Koheles, "Umosar ha'adam min abehema ayin." Some may say what it means is the difference between a human being and an animal is ayin. A person could say no. Animals can't say no. They see it, they want it, they eat it. They, whatever it is that their drives drive them to do, they do. They don't make any cheshbonos. A human being has the power to choose and to overcome his baser instincts. So that's what we learn by Yikrael Moshe. Moshe Rabbeinu's basic instinct, very nice, refined instinct, to run in and hear a shir. But Menschlichkeit said, hold yourself back and wait till you're called. Don't run in. Be a mensch. Wait. And we learn from there that even Moshe Rabbeinu, right, was the height of what Torah is. You also have to have menschlichkeit. You also have to be a mensch. And if not, if you don't have that das, then a dead carcass is better. Why? Because a dead carcass is missing its main attribute of life. But it still has a function. You could use a dead animal for something. Right? The dead meat can be used for something. The hide can be used for something. But a Talmud Chacham who doesn't have das, a Talmud Chacham who does not have midos, his Torah is worthless. Because the Vilna Gaon says Torah could be, the Gemara says, Torah could be a poison or an elixir of life. Sam HaChayim or Sam HaMavis. And the Vilna Gaon explains, Torah is like water. It's like fertilizer. If you pour water and fertilizer on a fine plant, it's going to enhance it to grow better. If you pour it on weeds or on poisonous plants, it's going to make more poison. More weeds. So the Torah will enhance whatever you have. And if you're not a mensch, it's going to make you less of a mensch. It's going to enhance that. It's going to enhance the weeds and the poisons. So therefore, a Talmud Chacham who doesn't have das, his Torah is not only not usable, it's negative. Unlike an animal doesn't have life, can be used for something. There's still some redeeming quality for it. Memela, that is the preface to Korbanos. Because right after that it says, Adam ki yakrid mikem korban. An Adam that will bring a sacrifice. Rashi says, just like Adam, the first human being, didn't bring sacrifices from gezel, from stolen objects, so too, don't bring a sacrifice from stolen objects. So, first of all, in other places it tells me you can't use stolen materials for mitzvahs, and it says in a much more direct, simple way. Like by lulav. It says, lakachtem lachem. Lachem, and not something stolen. Has to be yours. Why didn't it say over here, korbano? And it does. According to some, we do learn it from a sentence like that. Mikem. Has to be yours. Here it's like a roundabout thing. You have to be like Adam. Adam didn't steal because there's nothing to steal. If everything was his, so you can't steal either. Such a roundabout, convoluted way of telling me not to bring sacrifices from stolen property. Just thinking that this is the idea. There are many people who say that sacrifices are primitive, that they're gory and they're not refined, and therefore they're not looking forward to having animal sacrifices again. And not proper to use animals to slaughter them and burn them or whatever. It's cruel and inhumane. and it is totally primitive. Okay. So people who say that, who barbecue steaks and eat them, right, are absurd. Because okay to kill, maim, slaughter animals to fill your stomach, but to serve God with it, that's not okay. Okay, so then we're not talking about people like that. That's not ridiculous. How about people who say, now I don't think we have a right to use animals altogether. They don't eat meat. Right? They only are vegetarians. They don't wear mink coats. They don't wear leather shoes. So they're at least straight across the line. Those people are apikursim. Because the Torah says that the world was created for the sake of man. That God who created the world created those things for man to use. He's given, man was given, as long as he doesn't cause these animals unnecessary pain or waste them, but he's using them. And even if he causes them pain, but the pain is necessary in order to get the use, then that's 100% okay. And the Torah says you're allowed to eat meat, and the Torah says you make sacrifices. So somebody who thinks he's firmer than God, right, God doesn't get it right, right? God, we know better what God created these things for, and it's wrong to use them, is an apikoros. Somebody who says, it's not healthy to eat meat, I don't think that I should eat meat or whatever, I don't like meat, there's nothing wrong with being a vegetarian for practical reasons. But for being a vegetarian for ideological reasons is wrong. Now, some people say that, and so therefore, even sacrifices, right, according to that, would be not okay or whatever. And they even quote Rabbi Cook, Rav Cook, says that in the next third Beis HaMikdash, there will not be animal sacrifices, only meal offerings. Rav Cook never said that. It's impossible that he ever said that. I'll tell you what he did say, what he does say, what they learn wrongly. I'll tell you why he couldn't have said it, okay? Because Rav Cook, from what I understand, davened. And if he davened Shabbos Musaf or Yom Tov Musaf, it says V'sham Nasa Lefanechas Korbanos Chavoseinu Tamidim Kesidra Musafim Kehilchasam, right? And then it says what the korbanos are. They're all animal sacrifices. So third Beis HaMikdash, there's going to be animal sacrifices. So says a sitter. If you look in a conservative sitter, it doesn't say that. They aren't looking forward to sacrifices. They say it in the past. Shisham Osu Avoseinu. They did it in the past. They're not interested in Shom Nase. But that's not a legitimate sitter. That's somebody made up that sitter. Right? It has no, what's it called? It's like the female rabbi I once heard on the radio. Right? I don't know what you call a female rabbi. She's not a rebbitzin. That's a rabbi's wife. Right? Her husband is probably a rebbitzin. She is probably a rabbit. Right? So, whatever she was Reform, and she said, we in Reform Judaism are creating new traditions, which is an oxymoron. Either it's a tradition or you're creating it. Right? So this sitter is a new tradition. Okay. It's not the traditional prayer book, it's the new traditional prayer book. In any case, that's irrelevant. So Rabbi Cook davened from a regular sitter. Besides that, the Navi Yecheskel gives a detailed description of the third temple and the sacrifices, animal sacrifices, that they will make there. In addition to that, the Rambam says, right, that's not enough, the Siddur, the Navi, the Rambam says that one of the functions of Mashiach is that he will reinstore the Beis HaMikdash with all the laws, and all of the sacrifices will once again be brought. So what did Rabbi Cook say that they misunderstood and think that he says that that he does say that it's possible that in the future people won't eat meat, just like other Marishon didn't eat meat, and they'll be vegetarians, but not that they won't bring sacrifices. And it could be not that they won't bring sacrifices and have to eat sacrifices too, but they'll be vegetarians because the world will reach a higher level. What he said is the following. He said it on the following pasuk. It's in his Siddur. The Orva Lashem Minchas Yehuda Virushalayim Kime Olam Uchishonim Kadmonios. What he said is the following. What does the pasuk say? It'll be pleasant to God, the mincha, the meal offering of Yerushalayim, as it was in former days. Okay, in a nutshell. So what did they say? So Rav Cook said that in this world, animals need to be brought as sacrifices in order to elevate them in service of God. Because the animals are basically dumb animals. And just like the vegetable world is dumb tomatoes or whatever. They're not balei haskala. They are not intelligent beings. So in order to make the whole world serve God, which we'll explain in a little while, a little bit more, man has to elevate them and use them in service of God. But in the future, it says, "Umala ha'aretz deyos Hashem, kamayim liyam nechasim." The world will be filled with knowledge of God as the waters cover the sea. And there are sources that say that even the animals will become more intelligent and have a recognition of God. And therefore, the animals will not have to be sacrificed in order to elevate them in service of God. They'll have a recognition of God themselves. So, somebody said, so what is the punchline? Therefore, you won't make animal sacrifices. There won't be any purpose for it. That's not what he says. What he says is like this. In the future, the reason for animal sacrifice will be different than it is now. There's going to still be animal sacrifice, but it won't be for the same reason it is now. Now, animal sacrifice, one of the reasons is to elevate the animal in service of God. That won't be necessary in the future. There still will be animal sacrifices, but for a different reason. Not for this reason. I will say a million different reasons. But the vegetable sacrifices, vegetables, tomatoes are still not going to become intelligent. So you're going to still need the vegetable sacrifice for the same reason it was before. Kimei olam, as it always was. They understood that he meant to say there won't be any sacrifices of animals. All he meant to say was that the reason for the animal sacrifice won't be as it was in days of yore. It'll be for a new reason. But the vegetable sacrifices will be for the same reason. That's all he said. If you look in it, that's what he says. Doesn't say anything different than that. Again, it's impossible that he said anything different because there are countless sources that there'll be animal sacrifice in the third Beis HaMikdash. So it's impossible to go into the Siddur, the Novi, and the Rambam, and a host of other sources. In any case, so people who say that we don't have a right to use animals for our avodas Hashem, the Rambam disagrees, and he created those animals, so he has a right to tell us what we can use it for. And he created it basically for the sake of man, that man should be able to use them in coming closer to God. And using animals as sacrifices has that purpose just as much as using animals for your physical preservation. You can use them for your spiritual preservation too. Now, however, we don't use other people for our spiritual advancement. Human sacrifice is usur. Use an animal, because the animals were created for the sake of man. They're on a lower level of creation. They were created for the sake of man, Torah says. Redu, man has dominion over the animal, vegetable, mineral kingdom. But he doesn't have dominion over other human beings. You don't use a peer for your avodas Hashem. Everybody has their avodas Hashem. You can't manipulate somebody else. So that's wrong. Therefore, the pasuk starts out, Adam ki akrav mikem. If you want to bring an animal sacrifice, you better be an Adam. Because if you act like an animal, then you have no right to manipulate another animal, just like a human being has no right to manipulate another human being. So you're right. If you act like an animal and don't act like a human being, then you're right. You don't have the right to bring a sacrifice. But if you act like a human being, then God gave you the right to use animals in your service of the Ribbono Shel Olam. So that's why it says Adam. And what distinguishes a human being? The fact that he's a mensch. And one of the basics of midos tovos, of derech eretz, of character, is not stealing. Right? Person who steals and takes what's not his has no boundaries. And when there's no boundaries, you can do anything. Right? So the basic thing is creating, what does midah mean? Midah means a measure. Meaning you make boundaries. The major boundary is you don't take what belongs to somebody else. You don't go out of your bounds. And therefore, we learn it not because stealing is wrong, because it harms other people. That's the normal way that the world looks at morals. morals are important because of situational ethics. In other words, we can't have a functioning society if everybody's going to steal, everybody's going to murder, people are not going to respect each other, so we'll have a, anarchy. So therefore, in order that there should be a functioning society, people have to act properly. However, if it doesn't affect anybody else negatively, and everybody agrees they can act like animals, and nobody is upset, nobody's hurt, I go into my private home, close the curtains, and bring a group of people, and we all want to act like animals. Right? And whatever it is, sexual areas, and eating, whatever, we want to, what's it called, go on a drunken binge, but we don't hurt anybody. So there's nothing wrong with it. Because it doesn't hurt, it's consenting adults. As long as nobody's hurt, not stepping on anybody's toes, you can be a, you can act like an animal. Torah says not like that. Adam Harishon didn't steal, meaning the following, that it was, even if there could be something that could be called stolen, and it couldn't affect anybody else, because nobody else to affect, he still wouldn't have stolen. That's what it means. Stealing in its essence is not usher only because it affects somebody else and hurts somebody else. Even, what? Yeah, but not when he brought his first sacrifice. He brought his first sacrifice the day he was created, before he sinned. Right. The first, what? No, that was after this. The first sacrifice he brought, the first sacrifice he brought was not from stolen things. Okay. Right, that's, but it says, we're talking about the first sacrifice he brought wasn't from stolen things. So he brought the day, the hour he was created, he brought a shor par, it says. A shor that was a par, the day a par is 3 years old and a shor is when it's born. It was 3 years old when it was born. It was born complete, mature. And that was not from Gezel. God gave it to him to use. But if there could have been an idea of Gezel by Adam Harishon, it couldn't have affected anybody else. But it would have been considered something stolen in some way. He still wouldn't have brought it. Because human beings don't steal. Not because it affects other people, even when it affects nobody. But it's stolen. Okay? You steal from a billionaire who's absent-minded, doesn't know he lost anything, not going to hurt him, and you need the money. You didn't hurt anybody. Still stealing. Robin Hood. Still stealing. So that's the lesson. You have to be an Adam. And an Adam is a person who, by his nature, acts like a human being. Not just because how it affects other people. There has to be, and it has to be another lesson from Adam. It was impossible for Adam to steal. Couldn't steal from anybody. That's how it has to be to every human being. It's impossible for me to steal. There's nothing that could bring me to steal. It's beyond my capability. It's so clear that it's wrong. Right? It's like the Tzitzis Rosh Yeshiva says, the Torah says sometimes, lo yuchal, you can't. Not you may not. You can't do this. She says, well, you could do it. Just not allowed to. She says, it has to be so clear to you that it's wrong that you really can't do it. He said, gives an example. If somebody's standing on the top of the Empire State Building and you tell him, and he's not suicidal, and you tell him, jump. What does he say? I can't. Well, you can't. You can. Take your feet and jump. What does it mean? You know so clearly what the results are going to be, your feet won't move. You can't do it. Right? Really, you mean you don't want to do it. But it's so clear that you literally can't do it. That's how it has to be clear to a person how bad it is to steal, that it's like Adam Harishon. There's no way physically that you could steal. There's another way to steal from. Even though you have the opportunity, for you it has to be the same way. It's impossible. So that's the preface to Korbanos. Somehow we are supposed to use animals in our service of God. But the only right we have to use animals in the service of our God is if we are human beings. If you don't act like a human being, you have no right to use another. Then you're an animal. You have no right to use another animal. Just like a human being doesn't have a right to use another human being. Okay. So now, what are the ideas behind sacrifices? So the Rambam says a very practical simple idea, which all the commentaries jump on him. The Rambam says this in Morin Nevuchim. We'll see the same Rambam says a different idea in Mishnah Torah, and we'll explain why. But in Morin Nevuchim, the Rambam says like this, that people got used to serving their gods, the idol worshippers, by making sacrifices. It was an accepted mode of worship. And the Rebbeim couldn't come to people and say, stop worshipping me with sacrifices, because that's what people knew, how to serve a god. It's like somebody coming today and saying, don't pray. Can't stop people from praying. Right? That's the way you serve the Rebbeim. So God gave halachas and laws of how to do it properly to wean them away from idolatry, to make sure that all of the sacrifices they made were directed to God in a certain place, certain way, certain conditions, so they wouldn't then make these sacrifices to other powers or whatever. To wean them away from Avodah Zarah and accommodate the fact that they were used to serving gods, and this is the way the world was, in this manner. The Ramban says that's what sacrifices are. Now all these laws, what you could bring and how, all just for this simple idea. Then why do you need all these intricate laws? And it says that the sacrifices, that the world was created for the sake of sacrifices. It keeps the world going. All this is just to wean away from idolatry. And he says, besides that, Adam Arishon, there was no idolatry in the world at the time. He brought sacrifices. Noah brought sacrifices. There was no idol worshippers. Cain and Hevel brought sacrifices. Who were they weaning away from? And when did people get into the habit of doing this and serving gods that God couldn't separate them from it? Adam Arishon, nobody was in the habit of doing anything when Adam Arishon made a sacrifice, or Cain and Hevel. So he says, obviously, this is not the reason. First of all, the Rambam himself, in Mishnah Torah, says the following. He says, even though the sacrifices are something beyond our comprehension, they are deep spiritual things, still there are rational lessons we can learn from them. And he goes on to explain certain rational lesson. Same Rambam who said that the whole purpose of sacrifices really wasn't the sacrifice, just to wean them away from idolatry and to accommodate their need for this kind of worship. So the answer is very simple. The Morin Nevuchim, as its name implies, was the guide to the perplexed. People who basically believed in Greek philosophy, Aristotle, did not believe in anything that was not rational. So the Rambam tried to influence them by showing them and pulling them away from their philosophy to where it was against the Torah, and gave them rational ideas to understand the Torah, because that's what they were holding. So he explained the sacrifices to them in a rational way. But in Mishnah Torah, the Rambam is talking to all of us. And there the Rambam understands that there are for sure much deeper ideas to sacrifices. But this isn't a lie. There is one aspect to this. And what the Rambam meant is not that people got in the habit of doing this, and therefore you had to accommodate it, and at least wean them from using it the wrong way. That's not what the Rambam meant. The Rambam meant is the following. There's a certain human need to serve a god. And there are ways that are in the psyche of a human being, how to do that. One way is prayer. It's worldwide. It's part of the nature of man to want to serve a power greater than him. And one of the ways of serving is by praying. There's another natural feeling that existed from the beginning of the world of a way of serving a higher power, whether it's idolatry or the Ribono Shel Olam, is by bringing the world, we'll see one second what the concept is, in service of God. So it's not that people got in the habit of it just like this, and then you couldn't take them away. There's a reason why they became that, because it's a human need. It's part of the psyche of a human being. And therefore the Ribono Shel Olam didn't want to change it, but he wanted to direct it in a positive fashion, that you only use that idea towards the Ribono Shel Olam. So therefore, it applied to Adam and to Noah, even though there was no idolatry. It gives people a chance to express a human need for service of a higher power, and it weans them away from idolatry, not because there are idolaters, in order they shouldn't come to idolatry. Now, what are the ideas of sacrifices that serve the Rabbanu Shel Olam? So there are quite a few different ideas. One idea is that a person who wants to get closer to God and wants to wants to feel a bond with God. So the Michtam Eliyahu says that how do you create a bond? By giving. That's why the bond between a mother and a child is the strongest bond. Rachem, mercy, comes from rechem. Because the mother gave to this child. She gives to that. She gives to herself. Right? Not like the father who gives some cigars when the kid's born, right? But the mother gave, what's it called, 9 months of carrying this child around, the pain of having the child, and raising the child. So you give, you create a bond. A person wants to give himself to the Rabbanu Shel Olam. He wants to give over everything he has. But God doesn't want you to give everything you have. He wants you to live. So God said you can take animals, which are very similar physically to human beings, and use them vicariously as if you're giving yourself over to God through the animal. That's one concept of a, what happens to the animals that's happening to me. That's an ola, a burnt offering. I'd like to totally put myself on God's altar and burn myself and negate and subjugate myself to Him. But God doesn't want me to do that. He wants me to continue living. So He gives me a way of experiencing that vicariously through the animal. And the same thing idea is a sin offering. A sin offering is, you see the animal. It's a body without a neshama. If you act like an animal, then this is what you're fit for. Cut up, burnt on an altar, whatever. What's the worth of that external animal? But you are not an animal, you have a neshama. So, through the animal, vicariously, we bring out these ideas. That's one idea in a sacrifice. Second idea is that man was given dominion over the entire world. And he's supposed to elevate everything in service of God. Man serves God directly. God gave him the tools to serve him, are the things in the world. And there are different layers, strata, of things that recognize God. Mineral has no recognition. Vegetable has some kind of life, vegetable life, but also no recognition. Animals already have some kind of recognition, and animal life is much higher level. So each strata serves the strata above it and raises it up. Meaning, the mineral world serves the vegetable world. Plants grow on minerals, water, earth, the minerals in the soil. So the plant raises the level of the mineral world, right, up one stage to vegetable. Animals eat vegetables, especially the animals that we bring sacrifices from are herbivorous animals, not carnivorous animals. They're plant-eating, not meat-eating. So the animal eats the plants, which contain in it the minerals, and they raise that one step up towards an animal life, which is a higher level of life. Human beings both eat animals and use them in service of the Rabbanu Shel Olam, elevate the animal in service of Hashem. So man is supposed to take the entire world and elevate it and use it in his service of God. And that way the whole world then is created for God's honor. It says everything was created for God's honor, yet everything was created to serve man. But they go together. Because man is supposed to use everything in honor of the Rabbanu Shel Olam to get his idea of service to God means taking the world and elevating it towards God, using it in a godly way. And the epitome of that is a sacrifice. Taking the animal and the vegetable, because you bring meal offerings with oil and with wine, and the mizbeach is mineral, it's earth, stone, right? And you pour water on the mizbeach too. So you're taking the whole gamut of the universe, of the earth, and using it in service of God. And man is the orchestra leader who takes all these things and elevates them towards God. So that's another aspect of sacrifices. Coming closer to God by utilizing everything in the world in service of God. That's a second idea. Third idea is the more Kabbalistic idea. And that is that the Rabban Shalom... It says a long way to go.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Remind me in a few minutes. Well, 10 minutes. So the Rabban Shalom created another idea. It says the Karbanos are Karboni Lachmi, my bread. God needs to eat. The sacrifices feed God. It's the Pasuk says in the Navi, right? Do I need your sacrifices? Right? You're going to fill me up with thousands of olos that God doesn't eat. So what's it mean that it's Karboni Lachmi Leishai? So the way they understand it is the following. The Rabban Shalom created, the Rabban Shalom wants to shower man. That's what he created man, to give him this world to come and to shower him with goodness in this world. And really, God would like to shower us with that goodness, both the physical and spiritual goodness, constantly. Because that's God's intention. Being good wants to do good. But he knows that we wouldn't appreciate it if we didn't earn it. So God put us in this physical world, and he gave us things that we can earn that spiritual eternity, and also we can access the physical good that God wants to give us in this world. It's like the Rabban Shalom created a tremendous machine, menagnon. A system. And he's on one end, and he is constantly showering his influence of good into the world. Okay, but in order for that good to come into the world, it has to go through this system. The system is levers and all different kinds of pipes or whatever that transport this goodness into the world. In order for the goodness to come from God and be transported into this world, the machinery, the system, has to move. What is the battery power, the delic, the gasoline, that moves this system? Mitzvahs, Torah, tefillah, karbanos. These are the things we do down here that initiate the movement of the machine to bring God's influence for the good, to shower that influence into this world. If it's there, it's just waiting to be brought in, but you have to push the buttons, pull the levers, and give the energy for the machinery that God created to bring that shefa into the world. And one of the ways of creating the energy and moving all of the various apparatus that sets this machine that brings God's influence into the world is through sacrifices. So the sacrifices are korboni lachmi. They're like bread. What does bread do? It gives a person energy to be able to function. This gives the world the energy and to enable God to do what he wants to do, because he tied his hands. He won't do it unless we initiate it. So we initiate bringing God's influence into the world by providing the energy source, Torah, mitzvahs, tefillah, karbanos, and so on. Okay, and each one has a different effect in setting this machinery into motion. So that is those are the basic ideas of what karbanos are. Each one has many, many parts to it, but that's the basic idea of a karban. Okay, let me go to another aspect of the sedra, and that is the And therefore, of all the sacrifices that we have, the shlamim, the targum says, is called nichsas kuchaya. That is the real holy sacrifice. It's not the holiest, but it is the major sacrifice. Why? My Rosh Hashiva explained, Goyim can understand giving up everything for God and that's holiness. But if you have something for yourself, that's not holiness, that's for yourself. That's, they understand ruchnius as being for God. Gashmius, that's for me. They can only bring a korban ola, a burnt offering, because that's what they understand. Our greatest sacrifice is shlamim. What is a shlamim? A shlamim, a small portion goes on the altar, the fats, blood, right? Some of the inner organs, which anyway you don't eat, they go on the organ on the mizbeach. A small portion is given to the kohen to eat, and most of it, the owner takes and eats. He has to eat in Yerushalayim, but he can make steaks out of it, goulash, whatever he wants. That's kodesh. Because that's our idea of Kedusha. Kedusha is not abstaining from the world, giving up things for God. It's utilizing things in the service of God, even eating and drinking. But you're doing it, Kedusha, Kadosh means designated. You designate it for a higher purpose. You use it in a proper way in service of godly things. That's Kedusha. So the highest sacrifice, not the most holy sacrifice, the highest sacrifice is a shlamim. Shlamim means perfection. Everybody gets a little portion. Everybody, what's it called? Everybody, this takes the world and unites it in service of God in every aspect. Okay. Another thing that needs explanation is the concept of shogeg. The end of the Seder deals a lot with the korban chatos. Just to illustrate what a korban chatos is, in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, if the following happened to you, you would have to bring a sacrifice. A female sheep, you'd have to bring it to the Beis HaMikdash. What would happen? You went to sleep Shabbos afternoon after the Cholent. Okay? You woke up Shabbos afternoon, but you were totally disoriented. And you thought it was Sunday morning. Right? Have it happen to you? You wake up Shabbos afternoon and think you slept through the night and it's Sunday morning, or you don't know where you are, or if you are, or whatever. They say that one of the biggest proofs that one day there'll be the resurrection of the dead is that people wake up altogether after the challenge on Shabbos. So you wake up and you're totally disoriented and you think it's Sunday morning, and you go and turn on the lights. You have just desecrated the Shabbos, the shogeg. Unintentionally. I thought it was Sunday. I didn't mean to desecrate the Shabbos. I thought it was Sunday. In the time of the Beis HaMikdash, you would have to bring a sacrifice, schlep this animal, costs a lot of money. You have to schlep it up to the Beis HaMikdash, give it to the Kohen to sacrifice for you. You'd have to klap al chet and cry and confess your sin. Why? You made a mistake. What?
Why female?
Female animal? Because, what's it called? Why? An ola is only a male. Why a female animal? Because it, to a certain degree, shows something that is not complete. The nekeva, like we say, is always the receiver, missing. So the sin offering represents, chet means something's missing. It's a female animal. A male animal is more complete in itself. Right, Zohar says, "Ba Zohar la'olam, ba Shalom la'olam." A man usually can take care of himself. He's supposed to take care of his wife also. Today it's a little bit different, right? But a woman needs somebody else to take care of her, so she's missing. So a chait is where something's missing, so you bring the female animal. Okay. In any case, that's one idea. This is much deeper ideas, which I'm not familiar with, but I'm sure there's deeper ideas. In any case, so you have to bring in a chatos, and you have to bring it and say vidui and klap al chet and do tshuva. Okay, why? All you did was make a mistake. You didn't mean it. Doesn't God understand that we're human beings? We make mistakes. I didn't mean, right, to rebel against God. I didn't mean to be Mechal Shabbos. I made a mistake. So we explained Rosh Hashanah time in Elul that there are two ideas behind all mitzvahs and averis. One is that God commanded us to do it, and if we're obedient, we'll get rewarded for being obedient, and if we defy God and rebel against Him, we'll be punished for rebelling. That's one aspect. God is the commander, he's the king. Don't rebel against the king. From that aspect, here it doesn't make sense. If somebody didn't listen to the edict of the king because he made a mistake, the king is not going to deal too harshly with him.
Right.
King is not going to deal too harshly with him. He's understanding. He made a mistake. But there's another aspect to Torah and mitzvahs and averus, is that God, being the ultimate doctor, the creator of the world, advises us that these things are dangerous. They're not compatible with our neshamas. You eat treif, it damages your neshama. It's not healthy, spiritually. Okay, it's like a poison. And if you ingest poison, even by accident, it's still going to have its effect. The fact that you didn't do it on purpose doesn't make it any less lethal. Right? I had a mice in Miami with a plastic surgeon. The fact that he was a plastic surgeon is totally irrelevant, but that's who he was. In any case, he once came to me with a shaila, does he have to bench Gomel? What was the shaila? He reconstructed what happened the following way. His wife was cleaning the kitchen. This was about 40 years ago. And 40 years ago. And those days, the bleach, the cleaning things, came in glass bottles. So she was cleaning with this glass bottle of bleach, and the bleach fell, and the top cracked. So the top of the bottle came off almost neatly. Most of the bleach was still intact, but it was dangerous to leave it in this broken bottle. So she didn't want to throw the bleach away. So she put it into a Coke bottle and left it on the floor. One of her children came home, saw the Coke bottle. He didn't know there was bleach in it, so he wanted to do a face. So it was on the floor. We don't leave Coke bottles with Coke in it on the floor. What do you do with it? You put it in the refrigerator. So he picked it up from the floor and put it in the refrigerator, which set the stage for the following. The husband came home from a tennis match, very thirsty and tired, opened the refrigerator door just enough to stick his hand in and feel around for the first Coke bottle, picked up the first Coke bottle, which happened to have bleach in it, put it to his lips. Baruch Hashem, when he put it to his lips, he realized this is not, you know, new Coke, old Coke, whatever. Right, it's not even Tempo. This is something different. And he didn't drink it. But he wanted to know, right, he was like a swallow away from probably leaving this world, drinking bleach. So he wanted to know if he had a bench gomel or not. The truth is he didn't. Because you only bench gomel if something happened that normally was fatal and it didn't hurt. You were in a car accident, and normally that car accident should have caused you fatal injuries. And it didn't. You came out without a scratch. You came out okay. You survived. Okay? You fell off a building and you came out okay. Normally a person falls off a building would be killed, right? And he wasn't. But not that something happened. You were driving your car and somebody swerved and just missed you. Had he hit you, he would have had a head-on collision. But he didn't hit you. He missed you. You don't bench Gomel for that. You thank the Rebbeinu Shlomo in Modim. You're very thankful. Somebody once asked for a bik in New York following Shaila. He said he was walking down the street, and he just crossed the street, and he looked back, and a flower pot fell from the 10th floor right in the spot he was in like 3 seconds before. He wanted to know, should he bench Gomel? So Rabbi Bick told him, a similar thing happened to me yesterday. My wife was on the roof hanging up the laundry, and she was hanging my pants on the line, and a wind came and blew them off the roof, and they fell down 10 stories. Yesterday I was in those pants. Same idea over here, right? 3 seconds before you were in that place, it's very nice, but if you were in that place and it fell on your head and you were saved, you have to bench Gomel. But the 3 seconds before you were there, that necessitates being thankful. Right? Probably, yeah. There's other ways of expressing thank you to the Rabban Shalom. This has to fit a certain framework. In any case, so he didn't have to bench Gomel in that case, but let's say he would have drunk the bleach. Would he come and say, well, look, it was a mistake. I really thought it was coke. And nobody really had any bad intentions over here. Everybody really, the wife just wanted to save some money. She wasn't interested in murdering her husband. The kid wasn't interested in murdering his father. He just wanted to help his mother. Everybody's intentions were very good. It's just a big mistake. Therefore, big mistakes shouldn't affect your kishkes. No, big mistakes affect your kishkes too. If you drank the bleach, it doesn't make a difference. Same thing over here. You were Mechalel Shabbos. You didn't mean it. It was a mistake. But from rebelling against God, you're not going to be held responsible for rebellion. But the poison's in your system. You have to have an antidote. So the sacrifice and the tshuva and whatever takes the poison out of your system. Without that, you wouldn't get the poison out of your system. And another idea is that a person was put in this world to function only if he's sure that what he's doing is okay. And you shouldn't be able to move a finger unless you're 100% sure that what you're doing is okay. Because you weren't given permission to use this world or to use any of your bodily functions unless you're doing it the proper way. So before you do anything, you should make sure 100% of what you're doing. So you know if you have a right to use that thing or not. Otherwise, you're stealing. Because God didn't give you permission to use it in a wrong way. So the fact that you could make a mistake and function in a way, you didn't mean it. But you shouldn't have functioned unless you knew 100% what you're doing. The fact that you could be negligent is itself a sin. The negligence is a sin. You shouldn't be able to function in this world unless you know exactly what you're doing. Because you were entrusted with things, and you have to know, right? You can't say you made a mistake. Somebody's entrusted to what's it called, watch the atomic defenses of the country or America or whatever. And he can't say, well, I pushed the wrong button. I thought that was the button for my coffee. I didn't realize that launches 15 missiles, that's to start an atomic war. It's a mistake. First find out what you're doing. Is that the button for the coffee or is that the button for that releases 15 atomic missiles? So you have a very responsible position. Make sure that you know what you're doing. So from both of those standpoints, that's why Shogeg needs kapara, right? Even though on the surface it would seem that if you made a mistake, what does God want from you?